Jeff Rabin joins us now. Jeff, sorry, I have a stumper tonight. So a lot of people guessing calls, and you're not eligible to win. But it's always good to talk to you, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I had actually, to prove my guess, I had emailed it to Iridian, but it was Steamboat.
Ah!
I guess I was wrong also.
You were. It's a fascinating story. I hope you're still on the line when we get the answer. You are the guy we go to for all things Social Security, but very specifically SSDI and SSI. I wanted to bring you on this week because we had you on Let's Get Legal and had some great questions, of which people can ask right now on the text line or phone line, 312-981-7200. I wanted to start with this one, Jeff, that we talked about, because I think a lot of people, this is very topical and people wonder about this. It was someone writing in about their wife who had a diagnosis for autism and wondering if she was eligible for SSDI. Remind everyone what SSDI is and talk a little bit about autism in that sense, and then we'll widen out a bit more.
Sure. So we have two disability programs in our system, Social Security Disability Insurance, SSDI, for people who are totally disabled, unable to work because of their medical problems, and who have worked and paid into the Social Security system with their quarters of coverage. The other program is SSI, Supplemental Security Income, for people who are totally disabled and who have not paid into the system enough to qualify, but are also indigent. So those are the two programs. Both have the same medical tests. And that medical test requires that we prove our clients have symptoms that so impact their day-to-day function that they could not perform any type of full-time work activity available in the national economy. So autism can do that. Some people are so profoundly impaired that you know that they cannot work, and those people are going to qualify for benefits under guidelines that Social Security calls the listings of impairments, very specific medical criteria. But the question comes from those people that they now call high-functioning autistic. They used to be called Asperger's often. And those people are much harder to prove eligible because when you just talk with them for the 30 minutes or 45 minutes or an hour max that a judge gets, they don't appear to be so profoundly impaired. They carry on conversations. They answer questions appropriately. Everything then turns on the medical charts. So for the wife that we were discussing the other day on the telephone, the issue is going to be how well documented are her psychological reports and her therapy notes regarding her symptoms and their impact on her ability to act appropriately in social circumstances, sustain concentration throughout the day, and deal with stress and change and supervision. All functional problems that are very common for people with autism, even high-functioning autism, but difficult to prove and establish to the satisfaction of a judge.
For sure. Let's take a pause here right now, Jeff, but if people still are leaving the car and that piqued their interest and a reason to call you, 312-431-1000, that's from my brain. Did I get that right, Jeff?
You got that right. That'll get my office and my team, and we can help.
Okay, Jeff Rabin. SSI, SSDI. You mentioned that autism, like everything, is a diagnosis. It's the symptoms that get you SSDI, right? And I think that some people think that they're just going to write down a couple things and they're going to qualify for disability insurance. But what you have found is that there's very specific things that judges are looking for to prove that you aren't able to work, right?
Absolutely. You take an example of multiple sclerosis. It's a really serious condition. People work for years with multiple sclerosis. Some people have such severe symptoms that they can't walk and they have to use a scooter to get around. They're clearly totally disabled. Many have invisible symptoms, the fatigue, the mental confusion. My brother-in-law suffers from those multiple sclerosis hugs that could be devastating. And those could be totally disabling. All depends on the proof.
And that often has to come, in fact, it always has to come, from a doctor or a mental health professional, right?
Which is why one of my biggest concerns dealing with everything that's going on in our country is access to the healthcare system. People have to be able to go to the doctors.
Yeah.
Both to be productive, to make money, to help our economy, to support their families, And if they are unable to function, then to prove their entitlement to this assistance. But the access to medical care should be the number one focus in our country, because people have to be able to get that care.
And patients need to be able to communicate effectively with what is wrong with them, and not only just what do they feel on their body, but what it is stopping them from doing in their everyday life. Jeff, you've told me a couple times now that it isn't coaching a doctor to write something down that isn't true. You help out your clients make sure that they're telling their professionals what's really happening in their lives, so that the doctor writes that down in a way that then you can help them in a hearing get the insurance, disability insurance that they have paid into and deserve.
We have a trick we teach our clients, and it's so important that when you go to the doctor, talk about the guy that you see in the mirror and pretend you're talking about his limitations and his frustrations. And then you don't talk through your ego, and you don't talk with the politeness that your mom and dad taught you years and years ago. You talk about somebody's real sufferings and their real functioning. And it's hard to do. And I warn my clients, you start doing this, you may cry, you may get mad, you may curse. But if you talk about yourself honestly, two things happen. One, you get better medical care because the doctor has better facts. And then number two, your charts are accurate. So if you need Medicaid, if you need disability, if you need FMLA, if you need corporate disability, all these programs may be available to you because your charts are accurate.
True or false, there is a lot of fraud in Social Security disability insurance?
There are a lot of people that try to commit fraud, but very few get through. In fact, there's a study a while ago that showed the incidence of fraud in Social Security disability was minuscule. And think about it. Nobody can get benefits unless, number one, you have your own medical records showing that you've been treating for weeks and months and months, documenting your symptoms. And then number two, that either has to be approved by a Social Security internal reviewing doctor or by a Social Security judge who's trained to detect fraud and reject people that are phony. So there's a lot of safeguards built into the system. I've been doing this Social Security cases now for 44 years. And I'll admit there's a small percentage of cases I'm surprised I win. And there's a small percentage of cases that I lose and I say, gosh, that's just not fair. I'll give Social Security credit that the vast bulk of the time, their decisions are pretty accurate. And I win the cases I expect to win, lose the cases I think were dubious. And then we fight about those in the middle. But people who are truly just outright faking it, I'm not going to say it never happens. I'm sure it does. But it's really tough to do.
Less than is perceived.
Way less than perceived, and way less than that's talked about in partisan politics.
How often, generally, percentage-wise, do people get their claims approved for SSDI by Social Security?
Oh, that's a really good question.
Like 20%,
30%? Let me give you the answer that I can give. 35% of the cases nationwide are approved at the first level. And then a big percentage drop off of those that are denied. 10% are approved at the second level. 90% get denied, and then some of those drop off. And then at the ALJ level, which is the hearing where you actually get to go face to face with the decision maker, just over 50% of those cases are approved. And that's a big drop. A number of years ago, nationwide, the judges were approving about 65% of the cases they've heard. So that means tens of thousands of more cases are being denied by judges than were 4 and 5 and 6 years ago.
If someone calls you, I know you're not a perfect record, of course. You're not going to win everything. First of all, you're going to talk people through and only take people on that you think have a worthy cause. Do you improve the percentage of people getting the SSDI that they're looking for?
Not just me, but any experienced Social Security representative is going to greatly enhance the chance of a case being approved, because we know which medical guidelines apply. And for example, we get somebody complaining of a condition like multiple sclerosis or fibromyalgia or lupus. We often counsel them to make sure they talk about their fatigue. Well, the doctor knows I have fatigue. Well, if the doctor doesn't hear it, he doesn't chart it. If he doesn't chart it, I can't prove it. So yeah. Just counseling people on the correct focus makes a big difference. And then we know how to advance cases through the system. We know how to cross-examine vocational experts. We know how to cross-examine the medical advisors. We know how to talk judge talk.
Yeah.
So anybody that's experienced in this is going to increase the chance of approval.
312-431-1000. Jeff, we're going to chat next Thursday as well on this program. You'll be back on Let's Get Legal. So if you hear the name Jeff Rabin and you have a question, make sure you call us. But you can call him first, 312-431-1000. Chat soon, Jeff, okay?
Take care, John. Thank you so much.
We will have an answer to the question of the day next on WGN.
Imagine being the wizard of your own